previously.tvpodcastnetwork.
Hey, we're both victims here. We both deserve to get on with our lives.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Beverly Hills 90210. Today's episode is Season 8, Episode 23, Making Amends, Something for Our Arianas to Think About Doing. And now here are your hosts, Sarah D. Bunting and somebody else.
Oh, boy. Well, let me smooth things over with an anecdote, shall I? Here we go. We are now in episode 23 of season 8. These seasons, as listeners know, go on forever. But there's an expression when a baseball game goes into extra innings that you're like, yay, free baseball. And we need to come up with an expression that is the opposite of that. For whenever we're like past episode 22 in a season, yeah. It's just like, what is this? Like taxed baseball? Right. Yeah. Mm. Anyway, hi.
Hi. We are both victims here and we do deserve to get on with our lives, but that is so far away from happening, Sarah.
It really is. It really is. But someone posted in the forums that we're only like 14 episodes away from jettisoning.
Yes, I saw that.
Yes.
Jettisoning Brandon. Sorry, I cut you off before you got to say it. Bye-bye. Yeah. Soon.
Soon.
So soon. Also, Dave is back. Hi, Dave.
Yeah.
Dave is mad at me because I tried to be helpful in the wrong way. Anyway, enough about us. Except for this, you can purchase an ad on this podcast. $50 for a personal message, $100 for a commercial message. We can do as much or as little of the work as you want us to. You can give us a script. We're happy to do that. Go to previously.tv/ads for more information.
10% Sarah, off if you incorporate a sick Tara burn into your script.
Wow. Yeah.
Seems like it should be worth at least 15%.
Does it?
Does it? I guess not.
Oh, I don't want to find out if people like you more than me, Dave. I really don't. Anyway, let's get into making amends, shall we, Sarah?
Sure, Tara, okay. And possibly Dave.
Let's start with our C plot. You can't spell Donna without OD. So Brandon and Kelly making out is what opens the episode. I have several shots of these that I cut for the visual aids, which you can see at previously.tv, because no part of it is not disgusting, and not in the usual way that Brandon kissing is disgusting, where he's like trying to eat his whole partner's face. It's just like there's lip biting, there's pouting, there's like people being on top of each other on the couch. Like, these two have negative chemistry.
They really do.
They're so gross to watch together.
They used to have chemistry. Like, we sort of didn't like either of them. But this was, first of all, it was well before the Kelly super sucks phase.
Oh, my God. Yes.
The valley of death of which we're about to enter. But, I mean, now there's just nothing except loathing. Yeah. I did not take screenshots of this because my entire head was in my wastebasket in my office.
Well, fortunately for all of us, they are soon interrupted by Noah calling. And while we may have thought that Vincent Young was a bad actor before, we truly had no idea how bad it could actually get. Clip two.
Yeah. Brandon, thank God you're home. Donna overdosed.
Whoa, Noah, slow down. I can't understand what you said.
Donna overdosed. The paramedics.
Where are you?
I'm on my way to the hospital. Ellie Memorial. She's unconscious, man. They don't know what's going
to... Yeah, don't worry about it. We'll be there ASAP.
Ugh, ASAP.
Mm-hmm. Plus, wow. Also, wait for your line to be jumped, and then the editors will fix it. Vincent Young, is it your first day?
He is very bad.
Yeah.
He doesn't even make up for it with being cute. Someone also asked this on the forums, because they, I guess, had bailed before this era of watching, which, good call. But based on the visual aids, they're like, is he cute, or was he considered to be cute? And like, he's not ugly, but he's not cute.
Well, now that we've spent this time with him, no. Like, yeah. the number of pictures that we could Photoshop a bug flying into his mouth in, like, it's just no, he's like the Michael Cohen of this cast.
Oh my God.
Mouth breather.
Yeah. So at the hospital, Noah is no help to the doctors because he has no idea what Donna has been taking or how much, but they give her something and get her to at least open her eyes. And when everyone gets to the hospital, no one knows the truth or the extent of what has been happening. And Donna's dad dismisses the idea that she was taking pills, saying they were prescription painkillers. So pills. I mean, I'm not a doctor, but Noah knows that she was also taking uppers, and David blames him for A, not stopping her sooner, and B, stressing her out with his rape trial, and also C, clip three.
Josh isn't the one who cheated on her.
That is the shortest time between cold open end and slam into the credits, I think.
I know I keep clipping these every time, but it just brings me such joy that like the piano gets increasingly like doomy or tinkly, and then there's a perfect pause by the editors, and then
Man. Okay, so Noah said he was taking her to LA Memorial, but all of the B-roll is clearly Mount Sinai.
Yeah, although
Cedar Sinai.
We don't get to see Magazine Lady because Donna doesn't end up going to rehab, spoiler.
Yeah, God. So they pumped Donna's stomach. She can go home in a few hours, but she may have withdrawal symptoms for a few days. As everyone always does on this stupid show, Donna denies that she has a problem or needs counseling. See also when Kelly had a drug problem and when Kelly had an eating disorder and so on and so on. Donna just made a mistake. She's not an addict, but the doctor is not having it, saying that Donna could have died. Dr. Martin wants Donna to come home for a few days, as in to her parents' house. And she muses that this experience has taught her she can keep secrets, which is a cute way of saying she's a huge liar. But Dr. Martin wishes that she would let him help her, and she didn't want him to see her like that. And then clip four.
Where'd you get the uppers?
Noah's brother gave me some. The rest I took from the clinic.
You stole them?
Sorry. About everything.
I mean, and the first sorry is really pretty bratty. Like, you should have given her another take on that. She's like, sorry. Like,
yeah. Well,
yeah, it's a felony, dick.
Yeah, also, it's a charity clinic. Like, there's no good way to rob a medical facility, but like that's kind of the shittiest way.
Yeah, especially when your dad works there.
Yeah,
whatever.
Kelly tells Nana that Noah saved her life when Kelly goes to visit her, since Kelly wasn't going to come home that night. Kelly thinks that she should have seen this coming, and she is right. She's supposed to be some kind of fake social worker, or thinks she is. But Donna says that she wasn't asking for help then. She suddenly is now, but she's still denying that she's got a drug problem. And Kelly says she learned in rehab that she should figure out who brings out her strengths and who brings out her weaknesses. LOL, if that is true, why is she back with Brandon for a third time? I'm just saying. Anyway, somehow Donna knows what Kelly is getting at in clip five.
Noah saved my life. You said so yourself.
Donna, you're my best friend. And you know that I like Noah. But if you do drugs when you're with him, then you've got to end it.
Oh, that's why you've got to end it.
Yeah. I mean, Noah has a lot of problems, but like, he didn't do this to her. What?
Yeah. Also, did he save your life by giving you that sweet, sweet AB blood? Then get the fuck out.
Oof. Donna then goes back to work asking her boss, Robert, where Danielle is, because she has something to say that Danielle should hear also. However, Danielle quit yesterday because she didn't want to work for a company that didn't appreciate her. Good job, Danielle.
Seriously.
Robert calls Danielle a flake, but Donna says she wasn't and confesses what she did. Robert is stunned, and she promises she can make it up to him, but of course he fires her. He seems real sad about it, but still, bye, Donna.
He had to do that, but it was actually a pretty well-acted scene for him, not, you know, for Tori's super complicated hairstyle.
Again. Oh my God, seriously. Did you notice, by the way, he is Sam's dad on Dear White People, the Netflix show?
And he's also on Handmaid's Tale this season, then. It's the poor man's.
Haven't gotten to him yet.
It's the poor man's John Mahoney, kind of. He's like tall
kind
John
of,
Mahoney,
yeah.
Right?
Yes, yes.
Oh, I was like, where do I know that voice? Okay, mm-hmm. Thank you. That has been bugging the shit out of me for 2 days.
You're welcome. And since we're talking about 90210 and this guy, everyone, please watch Dear White People. It is a much better show, and it is on Netflix for seasons
really
one
is.
And two.
Handmaid's Tale, ditto.
Yeah, word. Donna is contemplating a pill bottle and getting way too rattled about a knock on the door. And it is Noah and his velour long-sleeved polo top, which you can see the visual aids. It's horrible. She tells him it's not a good time, and he's all pouty like, it never is anymore. Like, you fucking raped someone. You're lucky anyone is talking to you at all. But she lets him in, kind of, clip six.
Fine. Welcome to hell.
Already there, bro. Already there.
God, he tries to mansplain about why the first 4 days are the hardest, and she says that was about withdrawals, not about getting over being fired, and gets all self-pitying about being a thief. But he does get her to give him the pills, which he then washes down the sink, just like she told her dad she did, except on purpose. And it's true this time. Dr. Martin comes to see Donna, who had a good night's sleep and I guess is all better. And she says she'll come home now, but he says she is home. And she mugs so hard, which you can see in the visual aids. Oh. I hate it and her. They just got a cut on her so much earlier than they do. I wonder if this is also part of like the daddy's girl syndrome where she's like, no, I acted so hard. Make sure it all gets in the final cut. Like, it's brutal.
Mm-hmm.
So then Donna goes to the Peach Pit after dark to see Noah, who is finally reopening. God, this place. He thinks it's ready to move on. That's why she's there, too. She says when she took the pills, she mistook having no feelings for feeling great. He says he knows this isn't going to be easy. But after what she's just been through, that doesn't scare her at all. Him either. And she gives him a classic Barbie hand hug. And that's it for these two.
Yeah. And then it's like rippling like an inchworm. It's so terrible.
Yeah, she is so ticky. God. On to the B plot. Kelly considers stealing a baby. So at the clinic, a nurse and Kelly are helping in a teen mom named Leanne, who is Sarah.
Dark Angel's own Jessica Alba.
Yep. Only a couple of years before Dark Angel 2, I think. Like maybe two. Maybe Dark Angel's 2000, 2001. It's not long
right.
after this.
Yeah. She's styled quite young, but it's really a difference. Like once her hair got longer, mm-hmm. that it just like not aged her, but like made her look about 5 years older.
Yeah. She is convincing as a teenager here.
Sure.
She can't believe she's in labor since she wasn't due for another month, but this is happening. Kelly goes in to get Dr. Martin, who's on the phone with Felice in Rome, freaking out about stupid Donna. But when Kelly brings him back into her exam room, Leanne is gone. And when Kelly leaves the clinic later that night, she finds a very large supposed newborn classic TV. It is minimum 7 months old.
Yeah.
Left in a box beside the front door. So Kelly brings the baby home with no supplies and is just fine until Brandon shows up the next morning with literally everything. Like she apparently did not even have a diaper. And how she got through the night or took a shower, which she apparently did, is a complete mystery. But she says she knows who the mother is. She's guessing. And I hate that she's right, but of course it is Leanne. And that she probably panicked. And Brandon orders her to call social services, but Dr. Martin checked the baby the night before, and they agreed that they would call today to give the mother a night to reconsider. And Kelly is sure that when she violates this woman's privacy by looking up her address and bringing the baby there, not that that's how she's put it, but, you know, she will want the baby back. And Brandon says that she doesn't deserve him, but Kelly says she was just a teenager and is determined to give her a second chance and fully admits this is personal, SVU style. And when Dr. Martin shows up the next day, Kelly's at the desk, still holding the baby. And even though we already went through it in the C-plot, we have to revisit the matter of Donna, the original dumb baby, in clip seven.
Sometimes people get overwhelmed. They think they can handle a situation and they find out they can't. They panic. They make mistakes.
You know, it's bad enough when that describes a teenage mom. But as a description of Donna, who's been asking all year to be treated like an adult, please, it's inexcusable.
Dr. Burns, please. That actor does try to make his own fun. It's a pity that he always has to be, you know, fawning on Donna, basically, but
Yeah.
Please. That was just great.
Mm-hmm. So Kelly's all shroopy about the baby, and Dr. Martin's like, it's time to call. And Kelly is very professional and respectful about this instruction from her boss, JK Clip 8.
Not yet. Please, I just came by to get the mother's address.
Kelly, we went through all of this last night.
Look at this precious little angel.
Ugh.
You ready to take his mother away from him?
I have legal responsibilities.
Try telling him that when he has a nightmare and no mommy to hold him. Or when he's sick, or when he scrapes his knee. Tell him about your legal responsibilities then.
You have till 3 o'clock, not a minute longer.
Thank you.
Ugh, the simpering. She is so unbearable.
Hi, Dr. Martin, fucking pick up the phone and call social services and have them take somebody down there. Why didn't you do that last night?
Honestly.
Why did you take the baby to an emergency room or a firehouse
yeah.
or any other place where, say, well, I don't actually know if that's a nationwide thing, but
right.
in the city.
It might not have been then. Yeah. yeah.
Like safe haven, churches right. and firehouses, like... Hand it off to somebody. Why was he even, you know, why was he even about to deliver a baby? He's a cardiologist. I mean, I don't know why I'm even bothering to ask, but like, it's Kelly. Yeah. Just overrule her. She's 23. Who fucking cares?
Yeah. You've known her since she was a dumb teenager. She's no smarter now. Like, why did you even allow her to bring the baby home? She is not a certified foster parent.
And whose watch was it under which Donna was able to steal the drugs? That was Kelly, who should not have been inventorying that at all.
Right.
As our eagle-eyed forum posters pointed out, like, there is mm-hmm. absolutely no degree Kelly has that
no.
qualifies her to do any of this. She's supposed to be answering the phones. Why is she always down everybody's shirt all the fucking time? Like, she's a social worker or a nurse. She ain't.
She definitely has a degree of entitlement. Off. So then Kelly goes to a giant house where the woman who comes to the door says that Leanne is there but has the stomach flu and warns Kelly to keep the baby away so that Leanne doesn't get him sick. Leanne is not interested in taking the baby back. Her mother obviously didn't even know that she was ever pregnant. She explains how she hid it, which LOL. Kelly doesn't think she should be going through this alone, and Leanne says her mom can't handle things and is only going to make things worse. And Kelly is like, this is your son, but Leanne is sorry and goes back inside. So Kelly is all upset when she brings the baby back to the clinic, and poor Dr. Martin has to talk her down like he doesn't have his own problems named Donna. And then Pam from the Foundation, our old friend Nancy Moonves, comes in, or should I say formerly of the Foundation, because now she works for child welfare. And she explains that the baby will go to foster parents for a year, and if nothing has changed, the foster parents will be able to adopt him. And Leanne has up to a year to contact the state and get the child back. And Kelly gets all snitty about this because she knows best about everything and hopes Pam will give the baby's future as much consideration as she did his mother's rights. Shut up, Kelly. Like, shut up forever.
Oh, my God. And nobody with her hair in this series of episodes gets to make decisions for anyone about anything. She looks literally like an anvil.
Yeah. But like this, the switch that she pulls on this, where it's like, she's just a teenager. She doesn't know what she wants. Like, fuck her forever. Like, this is state law. Like, this is nothing anyone can do. Fucking deal with it.
Yeah.
Anyway, at the beach apartment, Kelly is still pouting about not getting her way with the baby as Brandon, sensibly for once in his fucking life, tells her that because of her, the baby will probably end up with loving adoptive parents, which is true. And then the writers have to prove they watched the show with some continuity in clip 9.
All this stuff. When you have a baby, I don't even think you notice. I know I wouldn't. Our baby would be crawling by now.
Barf, Kel.
I know. Wasn't meant to be. Wasn't right time. I think about it all the time.
Okay, well, we'll have a family. When we're ready.
I'm ready now, Brandon. I've given this a lot of thought, and I've decided to apply to be a foster parent to that baby.
That's a... That's a huge decision.
I know. And I'll understand if you don't want to be a part of it.
Kel, losing our baby was incredibly painful. And that was only after a few weeks. I don't even want to think about how hard it would be after a year.
That's a risk I'm willing to take. I want that baby.
Don't come back here without a baby, huh? Totally. Heart born on the outside. See, that reminds me. Go watch Raising Arizona, everybody. It's so much better than this.
Okay. One stupid thing first. On the Comedy Bang Bang podcast, they have a running joke about the movie Limitless, which if you haven't seen it, don't. It's not that great. But it's the one where Bradley Cooper gets access to like super pills that make him super smart and super good at everything and stuff. And Robert De Niro is this guy who's like trying to get access to it. And so the joke on Comedy Bang Bang is that they boil it all down to Robert De Niro going, I want that pill. Where's that pill? And it's like terrible Robert De Niro impression, but it comes up a lot. And so every time since I've written it in the doc where I see, I want that baby, all I hear it is the Robert De Niro voice, the bad Robert De Niro voice going, I want that baby. That's A. B, I'm pretty sure you can't be a foster parent to a specific child if you're not related to that child. I don't know how this works, but I'm pretty sure that is correct.
Yes. Listeners, feel free to correct us on California state law of the 90s and family law. But yeah, that's ridiculous. And certainly her.
Well, yeah, that's beside the point. But also, like, where is this child going to live? Like, we don't see her have a conversation with Donna where she's like, hey, would it be cool if the baby lived in our third empty bedroom that you're currently using for your scribble shop?
Your scribble shop.
I'm not going to call it a studio. I'm sorry. I'm just not.
No, nor should you. I will say that Brandon, I was really hoping that Brandon would like strap his bray on. And the one time he doesn't, and he tries to be sensitive to her, like the hand that rocks the cradle, cuckoo pants bullshit. Sorry.
Seriously.
Oh, wait. I'm not sorry.
You're not.
I'm not sorry at all.
Oh, God. Anyway.
They got more than they can handle. God.
Did you get the dip tat?
Gotta get the dip tat. Son, you got a panty on your head. All right, we're moving on.
Let's close it up with the A plot. Another story on David is only part of the stupid shit happening at the paper. So Val comes to the hospital with flowers for Donna, which we've already talked about her. And of course, given everything that she and Noah have just been through, the writers know to make this interaction with him very awkward and uncomfortable the whole way through. JK, clip 10.
Hey, any update?
Yeah, she's doing great.
Oh, that's good. Has she seen visitors?
Some.
Does she know you've been here all night?
I don't think so.
Look, I talked to my lawyer this morning, and Josh and his lawyer are on their way to see the DA.
Right, look, I called the DA, and I told him I'll help any way I can.
I appreciate that. I feel like I owe you an apology. And I think... What?
Look, we're all going to get past this. All of us.
It's just really confusing.
We're still going to try to move on, though, right?
Make new friends.
Yeah, my notes literally say in all caps, move to NYC, Valerie.
Like, honest to God, like this is so idiotic. I mean, even the idea that Valerie would go to the hospital to see Donna after everything that just happened, like Donna doesn't want to see you and you don't want to see Donna. Like no part of this makes sense.
Yeah. Also that she's doing great. Like she just had her stomach pumped. So
yeah, I mean,
old charcoal mouth might beg to differ.
So then Frank is helping David look at a house on the beach in Malibu, which is definitely what he needs right now. Clip 11.
As of now, David Silver, Beverly Hills Slacker, is history. David Silver, lead singer of Jasper's Law, has arrived. And you deserve all the toys, my man. Limos, private planes, models. Hey, Mr. Double Platinum, I'm talking to you.
Oh. I mean... Here's the thing. Well, here's a thing, which is why I asked for this clip. apparently Vincent Young asked for someone who's even worse at act to be added to the cast temporarily to make him look better, and mission accomplished.
Yeah, he's very
bad. Hey, Mr. Triple Platinum, I'm talking to you.
Mm-hmm. And they've cast the most like bug-eyed weirdo too. Like, you can just everything about him is so not on the up and up, but whatever.
Yeah.
They're going to record his album in front of a live audience, which David loves. David admits that he was on the fence, excuse me, about the band after Jasper quit, but now he's glad Frank has pulled him over to Frank's side. And he thinks it's one of the best decisions he's made in a long time, because his facial hair certainly isn't. It's still not.
Oh, good old Pacho.
Yeah. And at the beat, Steve is reading letters addressed to some dude named Ted who used to work in the building. He had asked Terry, remember her, to forward his mail, but the letters keep coming back and Brandon says it's a felony to open someone else's mail. But apparently this all started with a postcard. And Janet brings the latest letter, which she says smells like cinnamon. And Steve says, Jill is so cool, because that's the letter writer's name. He thinks he is in love with her. Because this is what it's come to here in season 8, in the burn-off period. Brandon is off to do another story on David, but this one is going to involve an interview with Jasper's Law's original Jasper, who tells Brandon he was pissed about being pushed out of his own band that was named after him, but he's already got a new one and is doing stuff he's proud of. They just need a record deal. Brandon can't believe how fast things move when you have a record deal, since it seems like David recorded that song and a couple of weeks later it was on the radio, kind of like how you can get raped on a Wednesday and testifying in a civil suit about it the Monday after, but whatever. Jasper says it usually takes months for a career to progress like David's has. Months is also hilarious, but Brandon guesses that's why they call it an overnight success, and Jasper says a response like that doesn't come cheap, and Brandon is hilariously unqualified to write this story, as we hear in clip 12.
You saying there was money involved?
What, in the music business? Come on.
That's a pretty serious allegation, Jasper. Can you prove it?
No, of course not. But, David's song is getting a hell of a lot of airplay, don't you think?
Oh, God. I mean, come on, Brandon. Like, journalist or not, it's David's music.
Yeah.
How on earth does he blow up like this with that tootly pablum without somebody greasing the wheels there? Come on.
Yeah, not good. So David and Val drink and kiss on the very romantic deck of the house that Frank was showing David earlier, which they're basically squatting on. And while he seems to want to do more, she stops him and he makes us regret all the compliments we gave him over the last two episodes in clip 13.
Come here.
David.
Val.
I just can't do this.
I don't understand what's
no,
wrong.
No, I thought I was ready, but...
But nobody is forcing you to do anything.
How come I can't forget a night that I don't even remember?
It's okay.
No, it's not.
I mean, really? Like, that's all I can even think of to say. Like,
I mean, really? Yeah, no one's forcing you to do anything. Like, she said no, so why are we still talking about it? Like, back off.
Yeah.
And it happened,
also,
like,
if we're going to have this scene, why is she all, like, perky, friendly with Noah at
exactly.
the hospital? Like, ugh. Yeah. Move away, Val!
For real. So Noah shows up at the Walsh house the next day to say that Josh has only been charged with misdemeanor drug possession. He will do a year in prison, I doubt it, and 150 hours of community service. And also, Noah wants Val to come back and work at the club again. Yeah, why wouldn't she? She can't believe he would think that Josh going to prison erases what she went through. And he says again that they're both victims here, which he should really stop doing. And she doesn't know how they're supposed to go on with their lives. I mean... Honestly, like, he's so insensitive and dumb.
Agree.
Steve and Brandon are boringly arguing about Jasper's allegations, too many J names, when Janet comes in with a letter from Jill, in a black envelope. This one smells like licorice. And Steve has decided to send Jill's letters back with a note explaining how he got them, but it kills him because it's over before he got a chance to meet her. Or is it? It's not. Then Brandon talks to some radio station guy whose name is Manny about the airplay for David's song. Manny claims that people really responded to it, but Brandon checked and it didn't get nearly as much play on other stations that had the same format. And very euphemistically asks whether this is a payola situation. And Manny's like, couldn't say anything about that. And Brandon's like, couldn't say or don't know. And he doesn't answer. And Brandon, even more euphemistically, rephrases his question. For the record, Manny doesn't know anything about radio stations getting paid to play albums. And off the record, it's the music business. The station was encouraged to play the song. And is the end result so bad? Isn't Brandon's friend a big success now? Hey, Manny, don't you think it's weird that Brandon is doing this adversarial story, or indeed any story, about someone with whom he has a personal relationship? Because I do. Never come
back. No, it doesn't. Here's what's going to come up. Mug and cup holding cop would like to note that for all of Manny's pointed incuriosity about Brandon's possible need to recuse himself from covering the story, he uses the handle of his cup. Brandon does not.
Of course. So David is setting up for the recording session at the club when Brandon shows up looking hilariously grave to tell David the bad news about not being the superstar he thinks he is. And he doesn't take David aside. So Frank is standing right there and hears what Brandon is telling him and shakes his head when David looks at him for like confirmation that there was payola. Brandon just wanted David to know what kind of people he's going into business with. And David covers his face with his hands.
Yes, he does.
And some broad rolls up wanting David's autograph on her stomach. And David really thought Brandon was his friend, he says, as he signs this woman's stomach. Gross. And he takes off. Brandon tells Frank he can run the story even with Frank's denial. And Frank knows he can, but it'll torpedo David's career forever because for sure the Beverly Beat has that kind of power. And it's almost like journalists shouldn't get themselves into situations like this, you might say.
You might. We have. Why bother?
I know. So David then has to tell Val about Brandon's story and that now David isn't sure Frank is telling him the truth. And he's all in his head about the show that night, but she tells him he's an amazing performer. And at the Beat, Steve is still saying they should kill the story for the sake of David's career. And Brandon has to tell him that payola is illegal. Plus, David doesn't need it because he has talent. That's the funniest part. And if they don't blow the whistle, there will be a question mark over David's whole career. David would not have known anything if not for you telling him so. Maybe you should have decided whether you're going to run it before you talk to him. Just a thought. But Steve suggests that Brandon is pursuing the story out of jealousy. But then he gets a letter in cherry red. Jill is going to be in LA the next day and wants to see Ted because she hasn't gotten Steve's letter yet. He's going to go meet her and tell her who he is, and maybe she'll be glad he's not Ted. Who cares? So then we're at the show. David looks so dumb lip syncing. He keeps looking at the girl whose stomach he signed, and then she wipes out. And I guess we're supposed to think that someone in this not surging crowd stepped on her arm and broke it, or else she's really overreacting.
Oh, my God. No, I assumed that we were supposed to. I mean, I confess that I muted/fast forwarded this scene because David's infernal tootling is so fucking unbearable.
Yeah.
But I assumed the implication was that it was like a soccer hooligan crush event over David.
Yeah.
No.
So he leaps into the audience to help her. And the next day, Frank is not acting shady at all in clip 14.
Her arm is officially broken. The paparazzi will definitely get this out, man. We could not have bought better publicity.
Unbelievable.
Thank you.
wasn't a compliment. I was referring to your compassion.
I didn't realize you had such a concern for others. Remind me to get you invited to one of those Save the Whale benefits.
Brandon was right, wasn't he? As far as the radio stuff. I mean, hell, you were in promotions. That was your job, right? To get the song played no matter what it took, even if it meant buying time.
You don't want to have this conversation.
Isn't it enough just to have a good song?
I don't make the rules.
But you sure as hell know how to play by them, don't you?
Yeah. If you walk out on this deal, you may not get another one.
Really? I thought I was a superstar.
Sure. With the right packaging and connections.
Cash?
David, think. Without me, chances are you'd end up giving piano lessons and praying for that big break that may never, ever come.
You know what? I don't need to think about this anymore. You can give your deal to someone else.
Ooh! Shut the fuck up. You signed contracts. E to B.
Ugh. Worst. But I also, like, until this moment, was still waiting for the reveal to, like, oh, no, I've hired that girl for you to sign her stomach, and I also hired her to...
take a digger at the front
exactly.
of the stage.
Because it was all so suspicious, but whatever. So, Brandon's at the paper working when David comes by and looks over his shoulder and laughs at the front page, which is the sewer system's dirty little secret. Rude way to describe David's career, but I get it. Ha ha, just kidding. Not really kidding that much.
The rise, fall, and flushing of David Silver.
Anyway, he asks about the payola story, and Brandon is gracious. JK, clip 15.
Why aren't you running that story?
Because I want you to be successful, David. You deserve it.
He is such a prick.
Oh my God, they both are. Also, could someone, anyone, please even like pick up a newspaper and learn anything about how journalisming works, please?
Seriously. Yeah.
I miss Andrea.
Yeah, so Brandon is so put upon telling David about getting his priorities straight in terms of protecting David, and David appreciates it, but now he quit the band and ditched the deal, so Brandon should run the story after all. Who cares?
Or how about you just run the story or not based on whether it's good and yeah. properly sourced and reported?
Yeah.
How about that?
Yeah. Mm. So Val is waiting in Noah's stupid boat when he comes back with groceries. She wants an honest answer about what happened the night he raped her, and he is super defiant and hostile, saying that honesty is all he's ever given her. Mm. He says the moment they got through the door to his office, she pulled him down onto the couch, which is news to her, of course. And if his whole defense was that he was blackout drunk himself, I don't get how he remembers that, but fine, I guess. So he says he thought that she did, but now he knows she probably tripped and reached out to steady herself. And she starts blaming herself as the professional good time, but he says he kissed her and she smiled. It's not her fault. She says she believes that, and also that it wasn't his fault either. Cool, everyone wins, I guess. I mean, this shouldn't be over, but I'm glad it is, because I can't anymore with all the things that they got wrong with the storyline.
Well, yeah, exactly. Like, if we're just going to bury it, that's probably best. But it's like, if he doesn't remember either, like, okay.
Right.
Like, that's not a defense, except I guess criminally it is. But like,
right.
if neither of them remembers, then what's the point of going down this road?
Yeah, anyway. Moving on, blessedly, but not really, because it's to Steve waiting outside a restaurant with flowers, talking to himself about Jill and how he's going to tell her he's not Ted. But then she gets out of a cab and says he's even better looking than she thought he'd be because she's never actually met Ted. And Steve doesn't correct her because stuff.
I'll take this one. I can't do it without laughing. Who cares? Oh my nice. God. Who cares?
So stupid.
Who cares, Tara?
So David comes home to see the table set for dinner and Val all dressed up. She thought they had a lot to celebrate, but he tells her it might not be as much as she thinks because he quit the band. Brandon, the big mouth, already told her she is proud of David and wants him to be happy. and recaps her conversation with Noah. What happened between them was the drug. She didn't want it to happen, and David knows, but it's nice to hear. And now she's ready to bone, which I guess means she's all better forever. Problem solved. Brushing dirt off hands. Yay!
Cool.
Okay, let's do episode MVP. Pam, the social worker who took the baby away from Kelly.
I'm going to go with Jasper, who escaped. Like, I'm sure he looked at the lay of the land and was like, I know it's named after me, but this is not fucking worth it.
Yeah, good call.
And also dimed David's so-called big break to Brandon.
Yeah, least valuable player. Kelly, who thinks that being a white woman entitles you to any baby you want.
Leanne, who thought leaving the baby in Kelly's care was an excellent alternative to raising it herself and taking responsibility.
Nice. Both good choices. Okay, user submitted challenge.
I scored some amazing stones.
At Tara Rose on Twitter, or Tara, sorry, I don't know which is it. It is. Asks us to list five ways Brenda might have been an even worse / less professional clinic employee than Kelly. I mean, very tough thought experiment after the events of this particular episode, but let's give it a shot. Starting with Brenda might not have been so careless leaving the keys in the drug cabinet around Donna as Kelly was, but Brenda also might have gotten the place robbed at gunpoint by a total stranger who busted in the door, which happened at the Peach Pit when she was there.
Yes. She might have worked through that trauma by taking on the Lavoine character at the front desk, which, if you didn't come in with gastroenteritis, is going to give it to you. Faux shiz.
She might have stunk up the clinic with her secret smoking.
She might have broken into the clinic if she disagreed with its affiliations and then turned loose all the, I don't know, spiders, little kids,
files?
Exam rooms. Yeah, exactly.
Nice. She would have definitely made things harder for Dr. Martin with her mush mouth delivery of information that he would need to know, because her enunciation, not the best. Wow, we did it. That makes five.
Yeah, we did. And now, an excerpt from the Sassy of, I forget which issue this is. That's right, March of 92, in which a professional acting coach assesses the acting ability of the cast. We have already reviewed Tori, Shannon, and Jason. Let us move on today to the acting coach's assessments of Luke Perry and Ian Ziering, beginning with Luke/Dylan. Dylan seems slightly threatening, but not like a James Dean where you thought he was really going to go off. Like if a girl were to go to the movies with Dean, she might not come back. Dylan's been homogenized into a nice, safe package, and it's very savvy. But he also has a physical naturalness and a depth which is kind of alien to the other characters. I don't mean that in a cruel way. We get to see so little range of any feelings that they can only be superficial. But any depth Dylan has is because of Luke. If this is a subtweet compliment to the naturalism of him fucking scratching his belly in all those shots, over fucking ruled is all I have to say about that. On Ian/Steve, and in brackets it says, we watch the scene where Steve's trying to get a stubborn nurse to release his birth certificate that has the name of his biological mother.
A nurse/nun, as I recall.
Yes. First he tries his charm, then he tries money. Now is the moment when he can't do anything. This should have been an incredible scene for him. He wants to find out who his real mother is. When he keeps hitting the wall, the scene should become more emotional, less controlled, more irrational. That's what we expect to see, but we don't get to see it because the camera cuts away. And later, when he's on the phone trying to locate his mother, another potentially revealing scene, he's wearing sunglasses. You can't even see his eyes. Probably the most important tool the actor has been taken away from him. And that is a lack of generosity on the part of the director. I doubt it was the actor's decision. Then again, their instincts might be right in Ian's case. Oh.
Burn.
And that's it until next week. I would also like to add that Jessica was the reader slash listener who reached out to me on Facebook about this issue of Sassy and is also the proprietrix of Instagram's at Teen Time Machine, which has a lot of good stuff like this. And you should definitely check it out. So, yes, that's Jessica at Teen Time Machine. Next time on Again With This, Kelly is a self-righteous rag, Noah buys Donna redemption, Val's mom and Kelly's dad are doing it, and David jam flirts with his neighbor. You'll wish you were the Grateful Dead after getting a load of our visual aids for this and every other episode of Again With This, which you can find on our website at previously.tv. You can follow that website on Twitter at PreviouslyTV, and you can follow this very podcast on Twitter at AWT90210. I'm Paola Braola Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is officially broken. She's Tara Ariano, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is Diaper Dude David T. Cole. Talk to you next time.
Hi. You know what to do after the beeparoonie.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv podcast network.